All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Daily Faceoff podcast comes courtesy of the Nation Network. Here's your host, Brock Segan, with Dylan D. Berthume and Michael Beebs Bondi.
Welcome into Season 9, Episode 27 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway, Ontario only. It must be 19 years or of age or older. Please play responsibly. I'm your host, Brock Segan. With me, as always, we've got Dylan D. Berthume and Michael Beebs Bondi. D, how's it going, bud?
Can't complain, man. Happy to be here. Nice light Wednesday night and makes for a beautiful night for podcasting. So happy to be here with two of my very best friends in the world talking fantasy hockey.
Oh, you expect me to respond after that heartwarming? I'm puddles over here. That was nice. It's great to be here, boys. We have playoff football this weekend. Both our teams made it, so we're happy guys out here. But as you guys know, this is a hockey podcast, and we're at the halfway point this year. So that's exciting. I like that. The year has flown. I feel like everyone's hurt. Like everyone's hurt. We put out a tweet the other day that just to see to our listeners, and that said, "Hey, show us your rosters if you're facing that injury bug." And we had a couple that came out. It's like 8 guys hurt, like superstars too. So if that is happening, we're glad you listen to the pod, and we will continue to try to help you through this ridiculousness. But yeah, no, it's been a quick first half for sure.
My big money league of record, I'm just rolling one defenseman right now because like I just cannot afford to pick up anybody else. The rosters are small and the IR spots are limited, and I lost Heiskanen and Zach Werenski recently, so I'm just rolling just Brent Burns right now. Like it's all I've got, and I've been facing like my toughest, like closest matchups of the year. I've been pretty dominant in that league, and right now I'm just like, maybe I should pick up another defenseman, but it's not going well. I had Thomas Harley for a minute, but he gone. All right. Speaking of the midway point of the season, we are going to take a look back at the first half of the fantasy hockey season and talk about our first half awards. We're giving a giveaway 7 awards today: fantasy hockey midway MVP, the best forward draft value pick, the worst forward draft pick, the biggest bust, then a value pick at defenseman, worst bust at defenseman, a value pick at goalie, and worst bust at goalie. Not just are we going to give out our awards, but we also polled the listeners to get finger on the pulse of who they think were the winners of these specific awards as well. And then in the Betway bets of the day, we're going to take a look at the actual awards, the NHL awards, and give our best bets, our best value bets of the day for the Vezina Trophy, the Hart Trophy, the Norris Trophy, and the Rocket Richard. So without further ado, let's get right in. We'll start with the Fantasy Hockey MVP. And D, you and I both picked Nikita Kucherov, and he also led the fan vote as well, receiving 40% of the fan vote. Nikita Kucherov was also closely followed by Nathan MacKinnon in the fan vote. But Nikita Kucherov for you, D, why is he your fantasy hockey MVP?
Yeah, I think you could have given it to, you know, any three or four of those top guys. MacKinnon, you mentioned. I think Matthews probably deserves a shout too. I'm sure there's certain points leagues that reward goals a little bit heavier where he's just been cleaning up and locking up matchups week in and week out. But it just came down to ADP. Like I said, I think you could pick really any three of those guys. You probably throw Pasternak in there as well. But Kucherov was very clearly going after all those other names we mentioned, right? So it just sets you up so much better for the rest of the draft for that second round. Coming back puts you right in line for guys like Marner, Nylander, Pettersson were all going in that range. So it was just so much easier to stack what ended up being, you know, two top 15 skaters or even one of the top goaltenders if you ended up going that route, or maybe Makar if he slipped a little bit. So yeah, it just sets you up a whole lot better and you're getting really equal production for a guy that's been on fire for the entire season. So that's why I ended up going with Kucherov. But I think there's, like I said, three or four names that you could have easily went there.
Yeah, just to remind the listeners, his ADP was 7.8. And he's currently ranked as the number one fantasy player overall in Yahoo Standard Leagues. Went behind McDavid, Dreisaitl, Pasternak, MacKinnon, Tkachuk, and Matthews. Kucherov, been splendid to start the year. Leads the NHL in points with 67, 28 goals, 39 assists in 41 games. And it's pretty wild because the Lightning, by and large, have not been very good. They've struggled mostly defensively because Kucherov's obviously still getting his, but currently on pace for what would be a career high, 134 points. Previous career high was 128. So he was my fantasy hockey MVP for the same reason as UD. Just really nice value there. Started to slip in drafts a little bit. We weren't 100% sure why. And I think what's most interesting is by picking him, you know, in that spot, you also bypassed a couple of guys who were like a little bit busty, right? I mean, Jason Robertson hasn't quite lived up to expectation. Tage Thompson, Kirill Kaprizov, guys that were kind of going in a similar range, they have not lived up to expectation. So if you went Kucherov in that spot, you've been rewarded handsomely. And then, yeah, some of the other names, I think Sidney Crosby was one that stuck out to me as well that would have been there at ADP in the second round. That's been just absolutely terrific. And if you paired those two together, you are looking pretty good. But Beebs, you went a little bit of a different route. Your fantasy hockey first half MVP was Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, I definitely thought there was obviously a case for Kucherov. I was right there with you guys, but I kind of wanted to throw a curveball here, and I think I got a pretty good case for Mr. Connor Hellebuck. Friend of Brock, I will say specifically, he has been a Hellebuck stan for the longest time, and this is why. Hellebuck this year, the reason why I give him this MVP is mostly because the goalies around him have just absolutely decimated their fantasy teams. The four goalies who went ahead of him, and we're talking Igor Shesterkin, Ilya Sorokin, Jake Ottinger, and Alexander Georgiev, none of them have a save percentage above a 908, which is just killing teams, including Georgiev, who's at an 894. So a lot of these teams drafted goaltenders expecting that to be their goaltender number one. They probably held off on other goalies as the draft went because they used early picks on goaltenders, and that has just killed them. We've heard so much about people complaining, you know, saying, what are these goalies? And we've said it, goalies are voodoo, but Connor Hellebuck has been an absolute stud if you took him as your number one goalie. And you are likely miles ahead of other teams in your league with him in your net. He's currently second in the NHL in wins, fourth in save percentage, third in goals against average. He also has two shutouts. And as I mentioned, he was the fifth goalie going off the board. So if you are that much ahead of the next four teams with your goaltending, you could afford to take chances on guys later. And you likely hit on other spots where these teams are panicking, need to make trades now. And like I mentioned, they probably didn't. If you drafted one of those top four goalies, you're not addressing a goalie for a long time. And you're likely, like I said, you know, you grabbed a Reimer later to round out your two goalies. You grabbed a Ville Husso. Sorry, Brock, I'm just picking on Detroit's goalies because they were something I was looking at down there. But you grabbed someone who also has hurt your team. So I love Hellebuck. I really think that he has just been so steady in a position where there is zero steadiness. So thank you, Hellebuck, for doing that. You are my MVP through the first half. I think you've really, really propelled teams ahead of other teams, because you are the one goalie who actually are giving that goaltender one status. So,
dude, his numbers are so bonkers. Since the middle of November, like, this is such a long sample, 14-2-2, he's given up more than two goals one time in that span. 18 games, he's given up more than two goals once, and it was three goals. It's not like he gave up four. A 167 goals against average and a 942 save percentage over that span. Unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
Too, about him just being a true workhorse. We're seeing the true workhorses struggle this year, and he's the true workhorse who's literally dominating every single night. That's so much value. We know he's going to lead the league and or be top five in the league in games started if he stays healthy, and if he's doing that while being top five in all other categories. Woo-hoo! MVP Connor Hellebuck for Beeps.
Yeah, he's starting 75% of the Jets games right now. So definitely a workhorse like he has been for many years prior. All right, our best fantasy value draft pick this season. D and I are once again aligned with Philip Forsberg, and he also led the fan vote at 50%. Some other names that got some love here. Sam Reinhart was the second biggest vote getter for fantasy value pick, which makes me feel good because he was my right wing sleeper during our right wing positional preview episode. So it's been really, really nice for Sam Reinhart. But Phil Forsberg has been absolutely fantastic. And you said I was a Connor Hellebuck stan, Biebs. And I was a Phil Forsberg stan for a very long time. And this was the type of production that I was waiting for basically ever. And he's over 8 points per game at the moment. 21 goals, 24 assists, 45 points in 41 games. But what makes him such a tremendous draft day value is his ADP was 144.1. I mean, how deep this man was going. The 12th round, and he is currently ranked as the number 8 overall player in Yahoo standard formats. I mean, you can't ask for much more. He was this close to being my fantasy MVP, because, like, what more could you ask for out of a 12th round pick? No one has ascended himself quite as high as Philip Forsberg from Yahoo or ADP to current ranking. The only other guy that comes remotely close, two other guys, Sam Reinhart, who we said was very close in the vote. He was a 97 ADP, currently the 12th ranked player overall. And then Biebs, your draft day steal, 148th overall, Valeri Nichushkin, comes in at 17th currently. So those three are miles ahead of the rest of the field here. Just been absolutely outstanding. I suppose Brock Besser could be involved in that conversation as well. ADP of 155, currently ranked 23rd overall. So those four have just been absolutely splendid. But D, I went on long enough. You also picked Philip Forsberg, and I am certainly kicking myself. It is a dynasty format, but you did offer me Forsberg for Keller. I was close to accepting it, but because it was Dynasty, I felt a little bit better about Keller moving forward. But for this season alone, Phil Forsberg has been significantly better. So I'm sure you're happy. We've talked about this before, but I'm sure you're happy that I did not accept that one.
Yeah, we can revisit it if you want to go Keller plus. I mean, it was great to see. Forsberg is one of the, you know, really reliable pieces, or what I was hoping would be a reliable piece coming into the season I had on that Dynasty team. But yeah, he's been fantastic. I don't think we need to touch on him too much more than that. He's also upped his shot production to almost four a game, really just kind of blasting by his previous career high in that regard, and really just gives you a lot of confidence in him being able to sustain this moving forward. Talked about the impact Andrew Burnett has had on that team and that offense, and in particular that first line. So you feel really good about him keeping this level up for the rest of the season. Certainly a lot better than I did, you know, 2 or 3 weeks into the season when I sent you that trade. But I do think one name we haven't mentioned yet that deserves a little love here in the forward value section. I think we forgot to mention that this was specifically for forwards, but Travis Konecny went just a couple of rounds ahead of Philip Forsberg. And he hasn't been far off. He's got 21 goals, 15 assists, and 36 points in 40 games. So Konecny's been an absolute stud and has really been a bright spot on that Flyers team. And, you know, one of the main reasons that they've been as competitive as they have been this season. It's funny, I'm in a league that is a keeper league. I just entered this year, so I forget exactly how many. It's five keepers. Keepers are assigned to the round that you get them in. It's my cousin's league. I just joined it this year, got to take over the owner who had McDavid, so thanks for that. But My cousin who runs it gets very aggressive almost every single season and trades as basically all of his draft picks every single year to load up for that current year. So he entered this year's draft without any picks in the first, I think it was 10 or 11 rounds. And the first two draft picks he made were Travis Konecny and Philip Forsberg. So he should be dealing with an absolute dumpster fire of a team. And instead he's comfortably in the top half of the league because of those two picks. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who, not just in dynasty keeper leagues, but in redrafts as well, maybe even if they made a mistake or two early on, a guy like Travis Konecny or Philip Forsberg and the way they produce this season will go a long way to correct that. So two guys that I think are in a great spot to just continue to be, you know, tremendous fantasy talents and provide a lot of value for the rest of the season too.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to get into. I think the one thing that's most impressive about Philip Forsberg is there's really no red flags in his numbers. Like you said, the shot volume has skyrocketed, and so his shooting percentage is pretty normal compared to, you know, the amount of goals that he's scored thus far. His on-ice shooting percentage doesn't suggest that there's any real regression coming forward, and we've talked about how comfortable Nashville one looks together and how that power play has been better, and it's helped him as well there. Biebs, your value pick was Valeri Nichushkin, and me personally, I drafted Nichushkin in every single one of the leagues that I play in my perfect drafts that I was writing in the preseason. Nichushkin came up frequently. He was somebody that I absolutely loved at his draft day value, and he is absolutely smashed at that spot. So as our resident Avs fan, I'm sure you're loving what you're getting out of Nichushkin. Once again, ADP was 148.2, just outside of the 12th round, 13th round, currently ranked 17th overall in Yahoo standard formats.
Yeah, feeling a little bit like the middle child of the family here, Brock. Keep forgetting my name, but that's okay. One day you'll get it right. No, I'm just kidding. I'm honored to be called D every segment we go into. But no, Val Nichushkin, this one was very obvious. As much as it is homer for me, it was one that I could make a pretty easy case for. As you mentioned, 148.2 ADP going in. That means that in a lot of leagues, people were not drafting Val Nichushkin. And let me just hit you guys with this. 40 points right now in 39 games. He's over a point per game officially. That puts him 29th in the NHL in points. Again, not drafted in most 10-team leagues. And then 123 shots on goal at the moment. That's good for 31st in the league. He's got 20 goals off those 123 shots on goal. That's good for 15th in the whole NHL. And then even better, even juicier, and something that we love to see for the future, Val is mucking minutes, boys. 21-48. Time on ice average, fourth among all forwards. I bet you could probably drop that fact on someone at the water cooler, say, you know, who's a top five forward in time on ice. And they could probably name four, but they cannot name Val Nichushkin as number five, I bet. And that's why he is an absolutely sneaky pick. A lot of people draft this guy as more a filler. If he didn't work in the first couple weeks, then it wasn't going to happen. They drop him. And that was last week or the week before when we were talking about biggest regrets. He was probably the name that came up the most with people dropping him. I think his draft value was hurt, obviously, by last year's postseason. Some things happened. We weren't too sure what was going into this year. Even me as an Avalanche fan, I was a little nervous because there was question marks about, you know, is he going to return? Can he stay healthy? He's never really stayed healthy across his career. And if he can do it throughout a full 82 and put up a point per game, people are just going to be laughing with that. And he's a guy a lot of times I'd say maybe sell high at this point. But with this time on ice, with these shots on goal, a lot of things are going right. I don't see much regression coming. Arturi Lehkonen's rejoining the lineup. That top six just becomes even stronger. And he'll be playing alongside Nichushkin. It looks like, as Brock mentioned last week, bumped to Brock for that guess on the lines. But yeah, Colorado came out today and it looks like it'll be Lehkonen and Nichushkin, which only helps him even more and means his ice time is not going to take a bump. So yeah, I'm super big, obviously, here on Nichushkin, but he has been performing and he will continue as long as he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I do think there is some sell high value here, right? I mean, averaged 10% shooter throughout his career, shooting 16%. The on-ice shooting percentage a little high at 14%. That is pretty sustainable when you're playing with McKinnon and Rantanen. But I think more than anything, like, I don't know exactly how long this Jonathan Drouin thing is going to last, but if it remains, I do think that Nichushkin probably doesn't have as much value playing on that second line as he does obviously skating with McKinnon and Rantanen. So if you can get a nice haul for Nichushkin, I don't think it's the worst time to sell high. But that being said, I told you I have him in every single one of my leagues and I haven't sold high on him yet. But I think that window is kind of opening here with Drouin kind of solidifying himself on that top line. The other thing, the Avs are apparently the kings of reclamation projects, right? Like Nichushkin looked like a huge bust, goes to Colorado, they figure it out. Drouin's career looked basically over. He looks really solid there. Maybe they need to trade for Ilya Samsonov and they'll return to a 920 goaltender. Who knows? They're the kings of reclamation.
I was just about to say, can they send a shitty goalie over and we can figure it out? Because yeah, we need better than an 894 out in Colorado from our top tender. But let's stop being positive here.
I was just gonna say, let's focus on some negatives here. Some of the biggest forward busts of the season so far. Okay, so the fans were quite torn. The listeners had four guys all tied at 20% of the vote: Tage Thompson, Alex Ovechkin, Timo Meier, and Andre Kuzmenko. Dylan and Biebs, you guys both went with Andre Kuzmenko, so I'll get to you guys second because I went with Timo Meier, and this is obviously a tough one to swallow as a podcast. We all love Timo Meier. That being said, DU specifically were a little bit nervous about Timo Meier entering this season and that draft day value, but I don't think any of us really could have seen it going as poorly as it has. His current ranking has him ranked as a 24th round pick, which obviously leagues don't typically go that far. And he was drafted as a fourth round pick. So playing 20 rounds worse than where he was selected, obviously less than ideal. Just 15 points in 28 games this season, 78 shots in those 28 games. Very reminiscent of what we saw from him a season ago after he was traded to New Jersey, which to your credit, D, was a lot of the reason that you were nervous. The ice time's actually taken a hit, and it's just been ugly all around. He's basically, you know, unrosterable at this point, especially at the moment while unhealthy. But if he can't crack that top six consistently and play up the lineup and play more than 17 minutes a night, it's a tough own here. And as a fourth round pick, I don't know if there is a bigger bust in fantasy this season than Timo Meier. But you guys seem to think it's Andre Kuzmenko. So D, give me a reason why.
I was going back and forth between these two. I felt like I harped on Timo pretty hard a few weeks ago, but to your point, I mean, even Dawson Mercer is making more of a case to get some more minutes and carve a role in that top six, much more so than Timo Meier has to this point. But I do think there's, you know, Meier's season is still a bit salvageable, and there's obviously still some upside here if he can carve a role. I have my doubts. We talked about how, you know, we think it's okay to drop him at this point, depending on your situation. But I mean, Kuzmenko just seems to be absolutely buried in the doghouse. And I mean, first and foremost, you have to wonder if he's even going to be in the lineup on any given night. And if he is, he's more likely not going to be on the fourth line these days. And it's just not great for a guy that's just not a volume shooter to begin with. 52 shots in 35 games. It's really fallen off a cliff. Talked about how, you know, he was one of the biggest red flags coming into the season. It was very obvious, shooting 27% last year. But there was hope, him just playing 60 minutes, that he could carve a larger role, maybe build on that shot volume and offset some of the regression that was going to come to his shooting percentage. Obviously, it's gone completely the other way. It was still someone we were staying away from on draft day. But I think this is a guy who absolutely should be dropped in all formats. And he really seems to need a trade out of Vancouver to really reignite his value, because, you know, odds of him getting anywhere back to where he was at last season in terms of his role seems slim, let alone building on that to a point where a shot volume is going to grow to somewhere where he could produce at a rate he did last year without relying on some ungodly conversion rates. So I just not a guy that I have any interest in rostering at this point. So that's why I lean Kuzmenko's way. I think there's, you can convince yourself into hanging on to Timo Meier if you have room on your roster still, and maybe it's easier to dream up a path for him to kind of get back into fantasy relevance, whereas Kuzmenko to me just seems so hard. He's already playing on one of the best teams in hockey, what's been one of the most productive teams in hockey from an offensive and fantasy standpoint. And he's already, like I said, fallen off the radar. So Kuzmenko for me, the fact that he just shouldn't even be rostered at this point was enough to give him that slight edge over Timo, but I could certainly see, and you could certainly make the case that Timo selecting him on draft day is more damaging to your fantasy team than what a swing and a miss on Kuzmenko did to you.
Yeah, Kuzmenko too is just killing teams because he's been healthy four times, and those games when he's healthy, it's not like he's hurt where you can bury him on your IR. He's just healthy. He's not providing anything to rosters if you did hang on to him at that point. And for someone that you drafted at that point, that could really, really hurt you. And I think where he also has hurt teams is with him being so good last year, they are holding on to him so much longer than they should. And that in the long run hurts you. But I just wanted to give a quick shout out. Kind of funny to be doing shout outs on bus, but Jonathan Huberdeau snuck out of this one pretty easy. 125 draft pick. That's still drafted in most leagues. And we know how bad it's been for Jonathan Huberdeau. He almost went a whole month without a goal. Did he go a whole month without a goal? Either way, you know, that. And then out in New Jersey, I also, Nico Hischier, he was around 60th ADP. He's someone who's kind of really let teams down this year and someone we expected to take a step forward, I think, us collectively as a podcast as well. And Timu Meier obviously isn't helping that either. So while we're going at one, I felt we should go at another. But those are my two other quick shout-outs that kind of had a little pop out to me. And, you know, if you're talking about bus, you got to mention Huberdeau. So, here we are.
Yeah, he's just been terrible. I have a deep dynasty league where you keep your whole team basically heading in from one year to the next. And I had Huberdeau and Kuzmenko on the same roster. And a couple weeks ago, I was like, bye-bye. I didn't even have anybody in mind to pick up. I was like, I've had enough of both of you. Good night, Jim Kite.
I'd rather have a rolling slot where you can just spot start someone every Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing about Kuzmenko too is the Canucks have really seemed to find something here with Pettersson, Besser, and JT Miller all together. They've been absolutely rolling the last three games. They rolled through the Islanders, the Devils, and the Rangers. What'd you say, D?
Shocker.
I mean, you play your three best players together and they produce. It's insane. Crazy concept.
Yeah. Don't put PDG on there and it works. Who would have thought?
I do think it, I don't know how sustainable it is long-term because they don't seem that deep. Like their second line of Pia Suter and Ilya Mikheyev and Kuzmenko doesn't seem super great, but I mean, they rolled through the Islanders, Devils, and Rangers without any issues really at all. And yeah, those three together have been dynamite. And if, you know, you can't expect Kuzmenko to play on that top line with Pettersson, what can you really expect out of him moving forward? Okay.
Their emergence of their bottom six has really helped them out there too. Dakota Joshua, sorry, I just wanted to show that.
Yeah, no, Joshua Bluger and Connor Garland have been awesome. Absolutely awesome. They're basically their second line. Okay, yeah. Biggest value defenseman pick of the season. Now, this one feels great because he was my breakout pick at defenseman during our defenseman episode in the preseason, and it is a clean sweep for Noah Dobson. I have him, D has him, Biebs has him, and he also collected 60% of the fan vote as well. So a clean sweep for Noah Dobson. I'm just trying to figure out here. Kale McCarr got some votes, which is interesting because he wasn't necessarily a huge value. He was the first defenseman off the board. But other
burner account.
The other ones would be Kale McCarr, or sorry, Quinn Hughes and Evan Bouchard as well. So, but Noah Dobson, clean sweep across the board for all four picks here. 38 points in 40 games. He has nearly got to last year's season total of 49 points in 78 games. But yeah, 6 goals, 32 assists. He's been absolutely dynamite. His time on ice has risen over 5 minutes compared to last year. The Islanders, while not being particularly great defensively, have been a bit of an offensive force this year, which is the one thing I said during the defenseman episode that I was a little nervous about with Dobson, was that he's great and he has all the tools to break out. It's just whether or not the Islanders can score enough for him to break out. And they've been really good. Bo Horvat, Matt Barzal on the top line have been awesome together. Brock Nelson and Kyle Palmieri and Pierre Engvall on the second line have been really good together. And it's worked. They've scored a lot of goals. They're not very good defensively. It's Ilias Sorokin has suffered as a result, but it's led to unbelievable fantasy production for Noah Dobson. And his ADP coming into the season was just egregiously low. He is currently ranked 59th overall, which is the 1, 2, 3, 5th best, sixth best defenseman, but his ADP was 112th overall. So just an absolutely massive draft day steal. Morgan Riley's probably the other shout out there. We weren't exactly sure how things were going to shake out in Toronto coming into the season. It looked like John Klingberg was going to be the top power play quarterback. That did not work out at all. Now Morgan Riley's found himself in a very familiar role doing all similar Morgan Riley things, operating as a number one fantasy defenseman. And he went 128th overall. D, Biebs, either one of you guys have anything to add quickly on Noah Dobson?
Just who would have thought that you could, you know, do all this with being the second most played player in the league. He's currently second in the league in time on ice. Baraki mentioned that they're just giving him time. 25, 51, and 90. He's playing almost half a game. Great for second half production. Real quick, sixth amongst defensemen in points. He's got 38 in 40 games played. Currently fourth in assists among defensemen, 11th in shots and goals, seventh in power play points, and seventh in plus minus. Those are all categories that contribute across every league. There's a reason this guy swept the category. Good for Noah. Good for Brock for telling people to get him as their sleeper. It's kind of cool. And
I'll do you one better, but he's actually fifth in points too. So
yep. Sorry. He must have that's my shitty eyes. But yeah, fifth in
points. I just want to give him the credit he deserves. Yeah, he deserves
all of it. Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. I was like, 38 is too much to be sixth. But
yeah, only Bouchard, Hedman. Bouchard might break up, by the way, Brock, if we're patting ourselves in the back here. Hedman, Makar, and obviously Quinn Hughes. I think there's a good case to be made for Quinn Hughes too, being a fourth or fifth round pick like he was. But yeah, Dobson, 21st defenseman off the board, and to Beavs's point, to your point, easily been a top five defenseman to this point. I think even you would admit, Brock, that you weren't expecting it to go quite as well as it has to this point. So he's continued to be a steal, and I think Vince Dunn probably deserves some love too, because he just continues to produce. Despite the rest of that team just falling off a cliff offensively. So
yeah, the one thing I guess with Noah Dobson that's probably helped too is the fact that they have been extremely banged up on that blue line throughout the season, right? Adam Pellick, Scott Mayfield have missed time. They had to go trade for Robert Bertuzzo. I don't know if Noah Dobson continues to play 25 minutes into the second half of the season when everybody's healthy. Pellick returned the other night and he played 24 and a half minutes.
Kulak still hurt as well.
Yeah, exactly. So there is still injuries to deal with. But Evan Bouchard, definitely somebody we need to mention as well. We were extremely high on him as a podcast. He was your breakout pick. So our breakout picks have absolutely hammered. I was going through our defenseman picks, like our sleepers, our breakouts, and bust. I think it was like a clean 9-for-9 sweep. Like all of our busts were great. We talked about them a couple weeks ago. All of our sleepers and breakouts were great. So hopefully all of our listeners at least have great defensemen, if nothing else. Speaking of great defensemen, there are some that have struggled a little bit and become fantasy hockey busts. One of which, D, he is your bust of the first half of the show, and he was also your bust on the preseason episode, so that's got to feel good. We talked about him a couple weeks ago. That's Tyson Barrie, and I don't know if you want to add anything on Tyson Barrie. Like, do you want to shit on him just a little bit more?
I don't want to picture that too much here, but yeah, I mean, I would say that he was going drafted a spot above Noah Dobson in ADP, and that was a very obvious decision to us, and hopefully anyone who listens to this podcast. And just that's crazy to think how much that could have made or break your season. Someone going in almost the 10th or 9th or 10th round there. But yeah, I mean, I was hesitant to even bring Barrie up as a bust before the season because of where he was getting drafted. But I still felt, you know, for a mid-round pick, a guy that I thought correctly, again, don't want to victory lap too much, but correctly predicted that he wouldn't even be on rosters come the midway point of the season. And here we are. He can't even crack his own roster, his own lineup on a nightly basis. And I mean, just having watched him play for the half season or so that it was in Toronto, it was just very obvious that everything he had to offer to his team was in the offensive zone. And when you're not getting that number one power play time, and when, you know, there's just not a whole lot of reason to keep you out there when you have as deep of a blue line as the Predators do. So I can understand why they are healthy in him. It sucks to see, because he could probably bring some offensive production to another team that needs that kind of role. Maybe a team like the Wild or some of these other teams that have gone through injuries or trades at this point and have some potential openings on the top power play unit. But yeah, if he's not filling that role for you, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have him out there. So that was the reason for, you know, avoiding him, swerving him in the draft completely. And obviously it was worth heeding, because he's literally not worth owning right now. And barring a trade, which, you know, they're not doing a whole lot for his trade value when they scratch him every night, it's hard to imagine him getting anywhere back to fantasy relevance anytime soon.
Yeah, since Christmas, we've all had the same health as Tyson Barrie, and we have all played the same amount of NHL games.
He has been hurt. He was getting scratched, but then he was hurt.
And he's currently scratched tonight, so
he's still hurt.
It's an iffy situation, but
it's it's probably just the, like you said, D, they're trying to protect any trade value that he might have, and they're just saying, he's day to day. It's actually just like he's not playing. Quickly, my draft bust is Adam Fox. A little bit to do with injury here, or mostly due to, with injury to why he's been as bad as he's been. He does just have 4 points in his last 10 games since returning. He's been back for like 15 games, but in his last 10, only 4 points in his last 10. He just hasn't been, you know, Adam Fox like. And to our credit, we were much lower on him than ADP in the preseason. His ADP was the number two defenseman off the board. We had him at 5, and he's still operating close to a point per game. So I think that he can have a solid second half of the season. It's a pretty good Rangers team with a really good power play as well. But, you know, when you're drafting a guy here in the early third round as your number one defenseman, and he just hasn't been there for you, and when he's in the lineup, he's nowhere close to what you kind of expected. It's tough. It's kind of tough to overcome, especially when we've seen a lot of these other defensemen that we've mentioned taking massive step forward. If you waited around 2, 3, 4 rounds later, get a Quinn Hughes, who we had ranked one spot behind Adam Fox, then you're looking a lot better off. And I think that was a lot of the problem that we had with Adam Fox coming into the season, was that you can basically, prior to this season, line Adam Fox and Quinn Hughes up side by side, and they're nearly identical. And you had Adam Fox going 28th overall and Quinn Hughes going 55th overall. And it just didn't make a lot of sense to us preseason. And obviously the injuries helped make us look correct there. And then Quinn Hughes being ridiculous has made us look even better. But yeah, it's tough when you take a guy as early as you took Adam Fox and you just haven't really had the returns, especially when a lot of the other Rangers that you may have drafted have been performing extremely well. We were all completely different here on our defenseman bust. For you, Biebs, the listener's top defenseman bust was Erik Karlsson. He collected 30% of the vote. He was the number three defenseman off the board. His ADP was 38.7. He's currently ranked 131st. So he's definitely been a bit disappointing from a fantasy perspective. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Penguins' power play has just not been as good as advertised. With as many weapons as they have, they just have not been great. They have been getting better as of late. And I do think that there's still a buy low window here for Erik Karlsson, just 28 points in 39 games. And if that power play continues to improve, I think Erik Karlsson's production will continue to improve, because it just can't get any worse than it has been in the first half. But Beeps, oh my God, I did it again. You guys need to like change your name so they're not so similar. It also is difficult because you also went with a Karlsson.
Yeah. You can now call me, I don't know,
D-Beeps.
Yeah, let's just go with Debates. Michael again, because that's not awkward for everyone. We'll go by my regular name. Oh God, I hate it.
Michael it is.
No, I went, we're back to Biebs. I X-nay on the Michael Nay there. But I chose John Karlsson, someone who personally has burned me this season, and he was the 13th defenseman off the board, being taken at 88.7 ADP in Yahoo Leagues. John Karlsson currently only has 23 points this year, which is not that bad, but where he's really hurting is he only has 3 goals in those 23 points. He's on pace for a whopping 7 Genos this year. For those of you counting at home, our boy Thomas Harley has smashed that amount last week. So 7 Genos, really not what you want from what some teams took off as their number one D-man. We expected a bounce back this year after a little bit of injuries last year. Unfortunately, we're just seeing age happen in Washington. We've seen the Ovi story, and when it's a team where everything flows through Ovechkin and Karlsson, when they're both struggling, they're going to struggle together. He is on pace for less than 50 points this year, and we've talked about it. There's a lot of teams where you can afford, like I personally wouldn't be dropping John Karlsson, but if you're in a really small league, John Karlsson could definitely be considered droppable at this point. It's getting a little scary for me personally. I think he's a great reclamation project for the second half. I think he's a good buy low if you're in a 12 team league. That team's kind of like Pittsburgh. It's going to get better. We talked about it episodes ago, you know, Ovi's going to Ovi. And when Ovi Ovi's, Karlsson's going to be there helping Ovi Ovi. That made me want a beer, John Karlsson, I'm sorry, bud, you crushed me in the first half, and being my first defenseman off the board on my one team, it's been really hard to pick up because there just hasn't been other D-men who have really been able to fill your slack in. So I had to get mad at John Karlsson there. I expected some goals from a guy who could have given us 20 almost 3 years ago. So
Yeah, I you know, we've been victory lapping quite a bit here because we've got quite a few things right. I think one thing we've been a little bit wrong about here is John Carlson. We were much higher than ADP on Carlson. He was inside our top 10 defensemen. His ADP was 17th, and he has not operated anywhere close to what we were expecting. That being said, I do agree. I think that there is a buy low window here for John Carlson. He is a career 6% shooter. He's shooting just 3.6%. His on-ice shooting percentage is an abysmal 8.8%. Things are going to get better. They already kind of started, have already started to. He's got 8 points in his last 10 games. Things are starting to turn for him a little bit already. I think that power play is going to improve here in the second half. Adding Max Pacioretty probably going to help a little bit as well. I do think that the Capitals aren't a team that are going to score a ton of goals, but you can get Carlson for probably pretty cheap at the moment. And I think it could be somebody that could help your blue line in the second half of the season. Okay. Couple of goalies to talk about now. The best value goalie pick. Again, more celebrating for me. My draft day goalie sleeper was Cam Talbot. He makes the list for myself and for Biebs as our top value pick. And then the listeners, 60% of listeners picked Thatcher Demko, who was Dylan's pick for value goalie of the draft. And yeah, it's been great. Demko has been absolutely lights out. To our credit, we were higher than ADP on Demko in the preseason as well. He came in still 14th. ADP was 18th, and he's surpassed that mark with flying colors. But for me, Cam Talbot was the guy that I really liked. I thought the Kings were going to be a very good defensive club, which has proven itself. And then some, they've been absolutely terrific, you know, stumbling a little bit as of late. But their defensive quality was really something that I liked and had me very interested in Cam Talbot as a super late round pick. He was a guy that I was targeting in the last round or last two rounds of every single draft in the preseason. His ADP was 168th, which is the 14th round. He's currently the number 5 ranked fantasy goalie, 57th overall. He's been absolutely splendid. He has, you know, rarely had a tough night. Even when he's lost games, he's rarely been lit up. This is just such a good defensive club. I do not think that he's going to have too many more poor performances. He's only given up 4 goals on 5 occasions, and one of them was, or 2 of them came really early in the season before this team really figured things out. So since then, since December 27th, going back, if you take out his first 4 starts of the season, he's 12-7-4 with a .926 save percentage, a guy that you got in the 14th round. Biebs, anything, or Michael, anything to add on Cam Talbot?
I just got to do my classic hammer the stats on this guy, just because he was, I believe, according to what I'm looking at here, the 39th goalie off the board in Yahoo. But he's currently 6th in the league in save percentage, 8th in wins, 3rd in goals against average, has 2 shutouts. That's insane. Yeah, that value is like, you just went into, that's like the value village. You go in, you find that piece of art, it's like 50 cents. You bring it home, you value it out, and it's like $1 million. You got yourself a Jackson Pollock. That is exactly what Cam Talbot has given people this year. It's just been insane. And when we're talking about all these, you know, surefire goalies not giving you anything, to get this out of Cam Talbot, this has probably really helped a lot of teams. So I couldn't stay away from him, but I definitely felt these goalie needed a shout out as well. So D, I'll let you pop off about the Thatch man out in Vancouver.
Absolutely splendid comparison there. The not Jackson bad, eh? Pollock coming home from the just a masterpiece there. But yeah, Thatcher Demko, D.
I think the only reason I went with Demko above Talbot, you know, you can make an argue that maybe Talbot's provided better value, but if you look at the wins, right, I mean, Talbot's produced a near identical stat line to Connor Hellebuyck, to who we were waxing lyrically about earlier in the show, and a guy that you could get, you know, 12 rounds later. So Demko's a guy that if you held off and went for kind of a zero goalie strat, right, and just really held off and tried to hit on a couple late ones, obviously Talbot is right in that camp as well. But Demko has been as good as anyone else in the league this season. And obviously a big part of that is the goal production. The Canucks leading the NHL in goals at the halfway point with 160. They're 10 clear of anybody else, which is just insane. And a large part in thanks to Demko and that improved blue line. They're also top five in goals against. The Kings leading the way in goals against. But, you know, I also just like Demko more the rest of the season. He just seems to be that a little bit more of a workhorse than Talbot. I think I feel better, even with him coming off the injury, about his ability to stay healthy than a 35-year-old or whatever he is, mid-30s, Cam Talbot. And obviously the goal support, pretty substantial. Like I said, the Canucks leading the way with 160, the Kings all the way down to 18th with 123. And I'm not sure that that really improves much more throughout the course of the season. So I do think Talbot's just going to continue to rack up the W's for you and continue to start a hell of a lot of games. And, you know, it really the only reason that he isn't quite at that 75% threshold that Hellebuyck is probably a credit to Casey DeSmith and how well he's played when he's gotten the opportunity to get in there. And, you know, deliver them some formidable performances whenever they want to give Demko the night off. But Demko at 71% of the game started right now for the Canucks. Don't expect that to change anytime soon. Don't expect them to stop putting goals into the net anytime soon as well. So I think Demko just deserved the shout out to your point. I mean, obviously the fans agreed with me, but obviously to your guys' point as well, you can't go wrong with either of these two guys. And if you waited on goalies, hopefully these were the two that you opted to go to, because they have just been cleaning up and are currently ranked, I think, both within the top three and pretty much across all formats in Yahoo leagues right now, and for good reason.
Yeah, the only concern for Demko for me has been just lately been a little bit more leaky than in previous, you know, couple months of the season. 898 save percentage in his last seven. He's only allowed less than three goals once over his last seven starts. But still, to your credit, D, or to your point, five wins in those seven games, because the Canucks are still going to outscore teams on a nightly basis. D, in our one league, you were drafting right behind me, our big money league, and I was faced with the question of Thatcher Demko or Jacob Markstrom, and I was really, really stressed about it. I ended up going with Thatcher Demko, which proved to be a very smart decision, but I think that Jacob Markstrom deserves a lot of credit and a shout out here as well. He's been quite solid as 130th overall pick. He's been great. He was one of the guys I also liked in the preseason, as in my perfect drafts, I wrote about him a lot. If you were going to play that zero goalie strat and draft late, 130th overall, get Markstrom. He's been quite solid in what's been kind of an up and down season for the Calgary Flames. All right. From good goalies to bad goalies, it doesn't get much worse than Ilya Samsonov. He was my draft bust for goalies. He was also D's, and he collected 50% of the fan vote. I don't know if Michael accidentally put Sorokin after Ilya and mixed up his Ilya S's, but no. A couple Ilyas, if you drafted Ilyas this year, they have not been very good. But Samsonov specifically, obviously an absolute disaster. An unmitigated disaster. He had a 394 save percentage and 862, 394 goals against average, 892 save percentage in 50 games for the Toronto. Yeah, no kidding. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, ended up on waivers 5, 2, and 6. I can happily say I ended up with zero Ilya Samsonov on my team this year because I was such a big fan of the Joseph Woll pick late in the draft. And had he not got hurt, had he not gotten hurt, then he would still be running away with this Maple Leafs job. But now he's coming back, he's gonna have to fight with Martin Jones, who we'll get to later. Shockingly, Martin Jones currently has the 9th best odds on Betway to win the Vezina Trophy, which is absolutely bonkers. But Samsonov has been an absolute nightmare, and there's just no coming back from it. I'm not sure he's gonna get another NHL start this season unless something goes horribly wrong in Toronto.
He might get one this weekend.
I think they're just trying to get Hill to be a start on Friday, and then I bet you Hill to be comes up and starts Sunday versus the Red Wings. I don't think Samsonov's back to start. I don't know.
I mean, I would have assumed Hill to be got the Sunday start, but they also just went Jones twice in the back-to-back last week. I would think that hopefully Sheldon Keefe would learn from the issue with Wall and just leaning on a guy too heavily that hasn't really taking that sort of role. And obviously Jones has in the past, but hasn't in recent years at all. At best, he's been a 1B for the Kraken last year. I don't know what's going to happen. I would have assumed it was going to be Hill to be as well. And maybe you're right in reading between the lines there, but I don't.
Well, he hasn't started since December. He hasn't started a game since December 30th with the Marlies. Exactly. So it's
part of me low-key hopes that Jones gets shelled tomorrow so that Samsonov can just come in relief and he just stands on his head. I want chaos in that net.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, Maybe you're right, Brock. I kind of hope you're right. I was hoping to just see a game of Hildeby and see what that 6'8" frame has to offer. but yeah, I don't know. I think it's notable that they're recalling Samsonov because, I mean, he was doing them no harm sitting down there in AHL, kind of trying to work things out, as they said, slash just burying his cap hit. So it seems odd to me that you would recall him even just on the off chance that, like Beeb said, he does have to get into a game. Because I think just relying on Jones, like I said, to stay healthy when he's been playing as much as he has, it's maybe a little bit of a risky play as well. So we'll see. I mean, maybe they're just hoping if they send him back down through waivers, somebody will think twice about claiming him this time. But yeah, I mean, that'll be probably one story to follow. But yeah, I thought, you know, for a guy to be going in the top 10 or top 12, whatever he was, and to not, you know, have any reason to be on a fantasy roster at this point, he was a very obvious pick for the fantasy bust of the position.
You said it. We're getting mad at Ilias today in between the pipes. And I had to go at Sorokin. Samsonov, obviously, clear standout candidate. Sorokin, though, I think just really, really burned owners this year. Coming 17th off the board in Yahoo ADP. Sorry, 17.9. So we'll give him 18th off the board. Regardless, that's where a lot of teams are getting 100-point superstars, you know, lockdown players that really shape their team and drive their team. But meanwhile, you're getting Ilya Sorokin, who is an absolute anchor in your net. Currently has 12 wins. It's good for 13th in the league. Not great, but that's probably where he's excelling the most. He has a .908 save percentage. Not too good. But where I'm really, really got to hate on Sorokin is his 3.20 goals against average. Fellas, one of the first goalies off the board, top two in most leagues, and he is 47th in the NHL in goals against average. That's ugly. That's, as I mentioned, not even an anchor. That's like, I don't even know what's beyond an anchor, but that is destroying your goals against average most weeks. And it's a guy who, with the draft value that everyone took him at, they're always in your head going to start him at that point. If you ever have to make the choice, you're always like, well, I use my first draft pick on Sorokin. I just think he has really, really hurt teams beyond the point of some nets getting recovered. Unless you've picked up Jones, you know, you hit on Joey Decord or someone like that. Once the year started, you might be screwed. So Sorokin, it was kind of an obvious pick going in. None of us were too high on him. We mentioned that, you know, goaltending is a lot about the team in front of you. And as much as we mentioned Dobson's been excelling, you did mention in that same statement that they have been struggling defensively, and losing guys like Ryan Pollock and Adam Pellick will do that. Some of the better defenders in the league. Sorokin makes a buy low, I would say, candidate right now, but at the same time, I don't really want too much to do with him because I think that people are going to be asking a ton still for him. Sorry to do it, Sorokin, but you know what? If you're going to play with the big dogs and you're going to get drafted with the big dogs, then you're going to get chewed out like the big dogs. So, Sorokin, you are my draft bust today. Sorry, bud.
Yeah, obviously, similar to the Adam Fox pick, if you don't have if you're going that early, you can't let owners down as much as you have. It's been tough, and it's been tough to be named Ilya. I do believe, I'm not 100% clear on the waiver rule, but I'm pretty sure that Samsonov has to at least play some games before he has to clear waivers again. Mm-hmm. So they can just send him back down without having to worry too much. But that's besides the point. We do not need to spend any more time talking about Ilya Samsonov.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness.
If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Let's talk about some actual good goalies, some actual goal scorers, and figure out who we think the best bets are for the Vezina, the Hart, the Norris, and the Rocket. So this is your Betway bets of the day, your Betway bet corner. And we'll start with the Vezina, where Connor Hellebuck currently has the best odds at plus 200, followed by Thatcher Demko at plus 300. Again, we're going to be taking a look at the best value picks overall and who we think can steal one of these trophies at maybe lesser odds. I do think that Connor Hellebuck is my pick right now to win the Vezina. I don't think it's anywhere close. But if I was trying to find some value, I really wanted to pick Joey DeCord because like he's been red hot, and if Seattle continues to play extremely well, and he has a great second half of the season, I think there's an argument to be made. The craziest thing, can't find him on Betway. You can't find him on any sports book with any Vezina odds whatsoever. So you can't bet on him. So
he can't win, dude. It's just he's not on the odds books.
Unfortunately, you cannot. I think the one guy that stands out to me with long odds is Sergei Bobrovsky at plus 2,000. The Panthers are still just a very, very good hockey club. They are a very good defensive team. Bobrovsky's been really good, had a bit of a sluggish start to the season, but has been really good as of late. And I think if you know anything were to happen to Hellebuck and his game started to fall off at all, and the same thing goes for Demko, we kind of already talked about it. Bobrovsky, I think, does have an outside chance, and at plus 2,000, I think there's something there. He's won six in a row with a .920 save percentage, which is obviously great. And since his the end of November, his last 14 starts, he's 11-3 with a .918 save percentage. So nowhere near the numbers that Hellebuck's put up, but obviously at plus 200, Hellebuck is the outright favorite right now. And if I was going to try to find some value, I would go Sergei Bobrovsky. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, if I'm going value, actually, I'm going to change my name now. I'm now Ilya Bondi, and we are going to rock with that. But as my first statement as Ilya, going to go pretty deep down the board, and I'm actually going at an injured goalie right now. It's Jake Oettinger. He's skating this week, so he should be back relatively soon, we hope. But at plus 3,300, that's insane odds for a guy who is in previous years been up there in Vezina voting. Oettinger has kind of really struggled out of the gate. He has a .901 save percentage through 21 starts. As mentioned, faced some injuries, yada, yada, yada. We just watched Scott Wedgwood take, I believe, seven straight games before Matt Murray stepped in and had that glorious shutout. It was beautiful. It was fun to watch. But what that means is that if Oettinger can come back and he can prove that he is healthy, he should get a ton of starts down the stretch. Dallas needs these wins. One thing that might hurt him is his health, and that could cause him to get less starts. But Wedgwood really hasn't taken over, you know, hasn't deserved more time with his .894 save percentage during this injury period for Oettinger. And for Oettinger, I coming into the year, he would have been, if someone said, you know, pick a guy off the top of your head who you think a little bit sleepier, but who could win the Vezina, I would have picked him. I just think it's obviously besides Hellebuck, it's such a crapshoot here with the guys in the middle. And if Oettinger puts together what we've seen him do in the playoffs, or we've seen him do before across a 20 game span where he does a .930, we could see a save percentage jump right back up to a closer to a .920 here. And he could get himself back in that conversation with a big win stretch. So for me, it was just a couple of glaring things there. The team in front of him, amount of starts, it's Jake Oettinger. He's 25. He's sick. D, who's your, who do you got taking this award? What's your juicy pick over there?
Yeah, it's hard, honestly. I think you guys got two fair picks there in terms of long shots. It's hard to imagine anyone outside of the top three at this point or any dark horse really coming through. I do kind of like the odds that Connor Ingram is getting, although it's not too often that we see the Vezina go to a goalie that's outside of one of the teams, you know, top, or one of the league's top five or six teams. But I do think if Arizona can kind of pull it back together a little bit, get themselves back into the playoffs, there's been plenty of narratives laid out already for Connor Ingram, which is a big part of this award. Already leads the league with four shutouts. I think he's just going to continue to take more starts back. He's kind of went through a bit of a rough patch there. Obviously, he's been a little bit better of late. Had a shutout against the Ducks the other night, or I guess it'd be a couple weeks ago now, but just three starts ago. for Connor Ingram. So I think if I had to put one dark horse bet down on the Vezina, I do like Connor Ingram at plus 2,500. Like I said, I think the narrative's already been laid out for him. And if they can pull it together a little bit and he can continue to be anywhere near where he's been at this year with the 916, and then you're obviously betting on any of those big three with Hellebuck, Demko, and Talbot falling off a little bit, then I think there's a reasonable path that you can dream up there. But again, it's hard to imagine any of these dark horses doing enough in the second half and any of those top three guys falling out enough. For there to be a huge shift. And I think the odds really show that already with Hellebuck being, I think, plus 200, like you said, Brock and Demko at plus 300 at this point.
Yeah, moving on, we've got the Hart Trophy. My pick for a value bet here would be Artemi Panarin at plus 1600. First of all, I just went to his Hockey Reference page, and in addition to his nickname of Breadman, Yeast Mode is also on there, which is just outrageous. Decent. 57 points in 39 games. The Rangers have just been very good, right? They're fifth in the league right now, 54 points in 39 games, less game played than the teams ahead of them, and could realistically be at the top of the table. If you sort by points percentage, they are fourth, so a little bit better. But this team is just really not that good at 5v5. The only line that they can rely on a night-to-night basis at 5v5 is the Panarin line. He plays more minutes than any other forward on that team. That line goes out there more often than anybody. They have ridiculously good 5v5 numbers. He's chipping in on the power play. I don't think the Rangers would be where they are without Artemi Panarin. And if we're giving a award for the player that's most valuable to his team, yes, Connor McDavid is valuable as all hell to the Oilers. And so is Nathan MacKinnon to the Avalanche. But I do not think that the Rangers would be where they are without Artemi Panarin. And at 1600, I do think that there's some value there. Biebs, who's your Hart value bet?
I just don't know. Like, it was so hard for me to go away from McDavid. I don't know if we've ever seen him. I'm pretty sure going into the year in most betting platforms, McDavid was actually like a non-plus bet. So to see him at plus 250 here is just pretty interesting. But I got to go with my boy Nathan MacKinnon, just because I'm a Colorado fan and because I get to watch him do what he does every other night. Why I got him here, it's just he just seems to be in freak mode right now. MacKinnon is probably like the ultimate competitor in life, it seems like. And I think that that's just going to push him to just go insane for this last second half. This is the one year where, let's be honest, he has a chance to actually win it. In the previous years, McDavid just would have been at 98 points at this point, and MacKinnon sitting there at the 66, like, crap. So at this point, I think this is his one year. I think he's going to use it. If he can fully stay healthy for the full year, I expect it to happen. He is in the last calendar year. There's all these crazy, you know, Colorado people love to jump on, I'll say specific stats to make people look better. And in the last calendar year, Nathan MacKinnon does lead all skaters in points. So that's pretty impressive. And I think he keeps that going and he moves it right into an MVP. So at plus 250, MacKinnon is my go. It's not fun. It's nothing crazy, but I had to, you know, shout out my boy. Do you shout out your boy?
I do think Matthews at 10-1 is pretty enticing. That's a nice one. I mean, he won the Hart a couple of years ago simply because he scored so many goals, and that seems to be the route he's taken again this year. I think if he gets anywhere near or above 65 goals, I think he's on pace for just under 70 right now, that he probably does have a pretty good shot of winning it, and probably better than those odds outline for him. And then I would like to shout out Elias Pettersson as well. I think if that line stays together, I think his production could continue to skyrocket. Right now, like, Quinn Hughes has better odds than him, and to Brock's point, it's, you know, you got to be the most valuable player on your team to start with. You know, a defenseman hasn't won the Hart since the 99-2000 season when Chris Pronger won it, so I can't imagine Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar for that season being much of a threat. So I would expect Pettersson before too long to leapfrog his teammate, and at the very least, I think he finishes with much lower odds than he's looking at right now at plus 2,500. So if you're looking for a dark horse, I think Pettersson's fine. But I do think Matthews at 10-1 is pretty good money, considering how easily he's putting the puck in the back of the net right now.
Yeah, I have so many Matthews stocks in fantasy this year, and he just can't stop scoring. I love it every single night. Go check the box scores, and oh, Matthews again. Okay, the Norris Trophy. I want to go with Noah Dobson because how much we've talked glowingly about him, but I'm going to go with Evan Bouchard, third best odds right now at plus 1,000. he's quietly got some of the best defensive numbers in the league. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he plays almost exclusively with Connor McDavid at 5v5, and that line always has the puck in the offensive zone. So it makes your defensive numbers look that much better. But the power play and offensive production is there as well. And if he can have a big second half, I think that he could get up there and flirt with the numbers that Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar have put up, and they have much, much lower odds than he does. So if Bouchard gets on a bit of a heater here in the second half, he's currently over a point per game with 39 points in 37 games. The defensive metrics are pretty good. I'm not sure if the Hockey Writers will actually look at those or not, but they'll probably just base it off of who has the most points, which is usually how it goes. But I do think Bouchard's got a chance there as well. So yeah, I think it would be wild for us to have him as a sleeper and win the Norris. Would be absolutely splendid. The fact that we have Bouchard third and Dobson fourth in Norris voting right now, or Norris odds right now, is pretty impressive. So I will go with Evan Bouchard. D, Bouchard was your sleeper pick in the preseason. Are you going to piggyback here?
I'll let you have him, because I do think the narrative, or at least from Edmonton fans, they for some reason seem to think he's a liability in his own end. And I still see stuff like that all over the timeline. So I'll let you have that one. I do wonder if the Riders maybe go back against a little bit, you know, just serving the most offensive defenseman after kind of the pushback that we saw from a large portion of them to Carlson's trophy last year, and then Carlson falling off this year. So if that happens, I do think that we could maybe be seeing the season of Josh Norrissey. You know, the Jets are leading the NHL in points right now, and obviously that always has a pretty big say in these awards. Morrissey, one of the better two-way defensemen in the NHL. He's been producing at a very impressive clip this year and last season. So it's nothing totally out of the blue either. And he's got some pretty decent odds right now at plus 2,500, which makes him tied for the fifth lowest odds off the board too, just with how heavily it's skewed in the favor of Hughes and Makar. 2,500 is enough to get you into the top five. So I think if you're looking for a dark horse again, you know, the number one defenseman that's been super productive, just shy of a point per game for the last two seasons on what is currently the number one team in hockey, I think that's a decent bet.
Yeah, I wanted to jump on the Makar one so bad, but that's not fun because I went with McKinnon last time. But I do think that there is some value there in a guy who has played five less games than Quinn Hughes, but has three less points. But my biggest value, my biggest standout, and I'm going a little bit down the board here at plus 3,300 again, I have Rasmus Dahlin currently leading all defensemen in goals right now. And I'm going to jump all over that because I want him to have a huge second half. And if he does, he could easily continue to lead defensemen in goals. I think that could have a heavy push if we see the point totals start to come a little bit closer. Quinn Hughes having a 20-point lead right now on Dahlin is not great to see when you're voting on, like you guys said, a points award. That tends to happen. But if Rasmus Dahlin can really turn it on the second half with Buffalo, I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge if. But we talked about Tage Thompson last episode, should have a better second half. I expect Dahlin to kind of be there for the ride, and I expect a massive breakout this year. Not quite getting it, but I am loving his goal production. So, you know what, for the guy leading all D in goals to be basically outside the top 10 here, I think it's a nice little value bet for sure when we're looking at that.
All right, moving on. The last one to talk about is the Rocket, which currently is being led heavily by Austin Matthews at minus 165. Second is David Pastrnak at 450. Matthews currently leads the NHL with 31 goals, followed fairly closely by Sam Reinhart, who can be found on this list at plus 800. But if you're going to try to find a dark horse, it's tough. I mean, I think Matthews probably wins this, like the way that he's been scoring. I have a harder time finding somebody that's going to take over. Like, could Nathan McKinnon start to score more goals down the stretch and be a value pick at plus 4,000? Sure, but he's already in a 9-goal hole up against Austin Matthews. So I find it very difficult. Yeah, like Pastrnak at plus 450, Kucherov plus 600. I think if I was going to lay a bet here, it would be on Nathan McKinnon, maybe Zach Hyman. I just don't see Zach Hyman winning the Rocket, as great as he's been. But I think it would have to be on McKinnon to get an unbelievable heater. Maybe Matthews run into a bit of a nick or a knock. But I if I'm placing bets, like, I feel fairly confident about some of these value bets that we've placed actually having legitimate chances at winning. I feel less confident that Matthews is going to not win the Rocket the way he's been going. But D, what do you got?
I will say, obviously, you know, Matthews, I wouldn't call him injury prone, but he does have a hard time playing, you know, close to a full 82 in a given season. And they've, you know, shown a tendency in the past to be pretty cautious in their approach if he is kind of banged up and making sure that he's as healthy as possible for the postseason. So if that happens, I mean, Nikita Kucherov is shooting the puck like crazy right now. I think he's like at 4.5 shots a game, and he's only 3 goals behind Matthews. So, I mean, Matthews misses 5 to 10 games, and Kucherov continues to shoot the puck as much as he has and shoots around his career shooting percentage of, you know, 15%. That could easily get him into the mid-50s, creeping up around 60 goals. Again, that's all dependent on him continuing to shoot at this absurd amount of shot volume that he's provided so far. That's, you know, been out of character for him, but we're half or 41 games into the season now, halfway through exactly for Kucherov and the Lightning. So I do think, you know, plus 600 for a guy that's only 3 goals behind and is shooting more per game than Matthews is at this point, I think that's some decent value there. But I'm with you. It's hard to imagine, save for an injury, anyone but Matthews taking this home at this point.
Yeah, my like super far outside shot would be, and it's hilarious to say this, Connor McDavid, 15 goals right now. He's 16 down. But as D mentioned, you know, say something happens to Matthews or something happens to one of these top guys, we've seen McDavid go on, you know, a 35 and 40 stretch, a 45 and 50 stretch. He is possible of doing that. Let's say he decides to go absolutely bonkers in the second half. It's maybe the one time you could jump on it, but Brock worded it perfectly. I'm kind of confident about the other bets, not confident, but at least I'd be like, oh, hey, I'd throw my money off that. I don't think I would do that with this one. I do think D nailed it though. I think Cooch is the best one, not named Matthews on there. If you are really making a case for anyone, but awesome Matthews, but AM34 just seems to be, you know, just another year of AM34 getting that rocket. I'm cool with that.
The only award we didn't really touch on is the Calder. I just, you know, we're not going to go through all the odds, but just briefly, do you guys think that Connor Bedard's injury out 6 to 8 weeks takes him out of the running? Do you think it limits his opportunity? Do you think that he is still a lock to win it? To me, I bet Brock Faber, as soon as he got hurt, like he's out there as a rookie playing 30 minutes a night. He also could end up putting up 40 points this season. And I looked at it today. If Bedard misses 8 weeks, he's going to miss about 18 games. And with the amount of games remaining that he would play and the amount of points that he's put up so far, he'd finish the year with 50 points or 51 points, something like that. It's hard to envision that a 51-point season from Bedard would be more important or better than a 40-point season from Faber, who may play the whole season and play 30 minutes a night with great defensive metrics. I almost feel like at that point, Faber would be more deserving, and the odds were like plus 1,000, I think, when I got him. I just want to know what your guys' thoughts are. Like when I tweeted out that I loved Bedard or I loved Faber's odds after the Bedard injury, everybody pushed back. It's like he could miss 8 weeks and come back and he's still going to win this no matter what. What do you guys think about that?
I don't hate the Faber one. I think he's probably the best rookie you could go, but
maybe Luke Hughes would be the only other one.
I got a random sleeper and probably dumb for even suggesting this, but Connor Zary out in Calgary, 21 points in 31 games. This guy is not far off of, he's only 3 points off of being second among all rookies in scoring right now. Obviously Bedard's there, but it's someone who realistically across a full season is right in the top three there in points. If he started the year on the squad and if he can continue to roll out in Calgary, I could see him sneaking by. And we're talking about an award that's going to be potentially a crapshoot if we see longer than 8 weeks for Bedard, because who knows with that team. We do know Chicago is they're just losing. That's what Chicago's doing right now. So who knows, you know, 8 weeks down the line they could say we want to protect our superstar, we're going to keep him out a little bit more. And if that's the case and Faber's ice time comes down a little bit, there's going to be other people they're looking at. And if Zari's second in points or at that point first, he's going to start turning some heads. I just really like his production earlier. He's really, you know, been an absolute surprise for me, at least this year.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, in the odds books reflect that Luke Hughes is probably the best bet just because offensive production tends to weigh more heavily. Although I am with you, Brock, super impressed with your namesake, Faber. And I think he's going to be a tremendous defenseman in the league for years to come. But it's, you know, he hasn't even really held on to that top power play spot the entire time since they've kind of gone through the injuries that they have, and presumably they get healthier at some point. Dougie Hamilton's not coming back. I think Luke Hughes has got that locked and loaded on that first power play unit in New Jersey. So I would expect his production to carry him a little bit further, but I still think it's going to be Bedard. Like it's, I don't think it's worth putting much money on it. I mean, the odds do kind of vary pretty heavily. There's some sports books that have Luke Hughes as low as plus 400. There's some that are around plus 1200. So if you're in the more the 12 or 13 to one range, then maybe Luke is worth a little bit, but it's, I still think they're just going to look so favorably on Bedard. I think he'll still easily lead rookies in all scoring. And I think they'll take into consideration the fact that he missed as much time as he did and still accomplished that. So yeah, I think, you know, unless he suffers another injury, where it's not like, you know, fractured jaw, it's not that lingering type of injury. It's not a muscle injury where you're worried about him maybe re-aggravated when he comes back. I still think he easily sweeps out this award come the end of the season.
And that is going to do it for season 9, episode 27 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by our friends at Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. Must be 19 years of age or older. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. And I hope you guys enjoyed the fantasy hockey first half MVPs and fantasy awards, and also our award predictions. Hopefully you can lay some money and maybe win some long shot bets there. It's no fun to bet on guys that are minus 450. So you might as well take some long shots, see what you can get, find some value on the board. Yeah. I'm Brock Segan. We got Dylan D. Berthy, Michael B. Spondy. Until next week, cheers.
It was cold in here without D streamers.
Peace. No one playing Friday and Sunday. No streamers. Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.